Our next reader is Nancy Esther James.
One time when I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I found a shop called Mabel's, and it sold gifts and antiques and that sort of thing. Well, it was named after Mabel, a cat, but the cat was no longer with them. But they had a successor to Mabel named Chloe. So Chloe was curled up on a bed, and I thought she looked kind of cute, and I asked if I could take a photograph. Well, the owner wasn't there, but the saleswoman said, oh, I don't think the owner would like it if you did that. So I had to make a sketch from memory, which I did. Sorry, it's not a little bigger. And I wrote this poem about Chloe, the Mabel's cat, in a shop in Santa Fe. The life of a symbol is not easy. I am on duty all day in this shop filled with replicas of dear departed Mabel, legend in her own nine. Ceramic Mabels, needlepoint Mabels, funny wooden Mabels, even cookies with Mabel's face. The life of a symbol can be demanding. Just because I lie on a gilded bed doesn't mean I have a soft job. I'm available for petting, ear scratching, baby talk, from browsers with more cat fancy than cash. The life of a symbol is not always fair. I don't even look like Mabel. She was black with white muzzle and paws. I'm more like a spotted cow. They introduce me as her cousin, but who knows the family tree of a cat? The life of a symbol is exhausting. Maybe if I hide among these pillows, curl up against this cat-shaped one, close my eyes, imitate art, shoppers won't figure out which one of us is real, and I can catnap.
And our next reader is Michael Albright, who's been helping us with all the books tonight. Yay, Michael!
Thank you very much. I didn't know who brought these. This is a publication that's put out by the Thomas Merton Center. And a lovely coincidence here is that the person that I wrote this poem for, my lovely stepdaughter, Allison, interned there this summer. And she actually has an article that she wrote in there. And I didn't even know that this would be here. So her name's Allison McCoskey. And if anybody wants to read it, it's here. So very much so. Well, you'll be hearing from me. But I'm very proud of her, and I love her dearly, but she sure says some interesting stuff sometimes. And this is for her. This is called Actual Sparks. Overheard from a college sophomore hoarding a sparkler on the 4th of July. Are these actual sparks? As if growing up in a world of websites and Facebook and reality TV has led her by default to question the purity of everything, not being sure if there is a real world behind this fake and pretty one at all. As water rises to seek its own level, everything we can know and be can only fill the vessel designed to contain it. The overflow is bright and dazzling, like staring directly into the flame instead of shadows dancing on a wall. Is that the sun? Is that the real moon? Where did I come from? Are you my true love? Is this my vanishing past, squeezing itself through the blinding present, hurling me into my actual future. Thanks.
I'm fine. I'm fine, hon. Thanks a lot. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just cool now. Hey, then our next poet reading tonight is Laura Maria.
Excuse me. Para italiano. Un poquito. I've been taking courses at Pitt for 3 years now, going back to school. And one of my courses that I've started to enjoy is poetry. But I've been doing other literature courses, and I do a lot of music courses. And I took a course during the past year in Native American literature. The professor, Ken Boas, wonderful professor. I recommend his courses anytime. He had authors from the western part of this country, but he had none, absolutely none, from the Algonquin Nation. And guess who was in class? An Algonquin. So I felt motivated to have at least in his future sessions at least one Algonquin writer. So that helped motivated me. And for those who have a bit of Italian heritage, I tried to attempt to translate this into 9 other languages, including Italiano. And if anybody would like to see a copy of it, in English that is, I have 2 published poems, and this poem is at glcccpgh.org in the winter 2012 newsletter, pages 2 and 3. This particular poem is on page 2. And another little side note, I know I talk too much.
Well, read the poem.
Okay.
Read the poem.
Okay. A Native American am I. There is more to me than meets the eye. An Algonquin Indian lady by heritage. Is there any remaining vestige? My nation is Algonquin, but I know not what tribe has been. I relate to Wendy Rose of mixed breed and proud of my Native American heritage indeed. As a young girl, I grew up with much strife for expressing the feelings and thoughts in my life. My heart would write poetry to the one I love, and I would cry greatly when often rebuffed as they quickly flew away like a dove. My heart would be severely pierced when known as the Algonquin squaw, and then bleed and ache, for what it expressed was no fake. I am more than a woman, you see, for I know what I am to be, a mother, a sister, a daughter, a wife, and more, with a love that may be full of what you may adore. At times I show my intellect and insight, and I never want to fight. Peace, love, and harmony is what I want to be. My heart is overflowing with love, harmony, and loyalty. For those who truly know who I am to be, although my life is full of kindness and caring for you, do you truly know what my heart is to do? My Native ancestors treasured the kind of woman that I am, for no woman can reach out to another as in the comfort of a lamb, without bringing to her bosom the heartfelt love that is no longer lonesome. All of this is just a part of me, for I want to share with you what I am to be. I may speak in foreign languages, play the piano and chess, but you know who I truly am to be? A lesbian, a feminine lesbian to my core, who wants to love and share my life with another femme who I adore.
Hey there. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 more readers, so would everybody just be sure to read the poem, okay? Not a big intro, okay?
Okay,
ask me afterwards if that would be all right, please. Okay? Okay. Okay, just hang on a minute. Okay, our next reader is Steve Pusateri.
Okay.
All right, 1 second here. All right, hello, everybody. This is a poem about a tattoo. It's just called Homer. I carved that face into my skin with ink and needles. By that, of course, I mean someone did it for me. The afternoon was drunk on cheap corn beer. By that, I mean, of course, I was. I said I wanted Homer. He said Simpson. Of course, he said Simpson. No, the other, I said, with the dead oracle eyes. Of course, I came off like an asshole. And of course, I went to a new shop the next week with a picture.
Okay, Lucille Seibert. Are you here, Lucille?
The Granada. Every Friday night, my dad went to the bar, so my mom took me and my brother to the movies, mostly to the Granada in Malden. I loved the Granada, thick red carpet with gold swirlies, huge movie posters framed in gold. We bought candy, and almost always I had jujubes. In the dark theater, we followed the usher, his flashlight aimed at the carpet, and settled into our plush seats as previews of coming attractions came on the screen. I would put a jujube in my mouth and try to guess the flavor. My mom wasn't too picky about the movies we saw. She just wanted to get out of the house. We watched a lot of cowboys and Indians, and aliens from outer space. Cowboys and Indians I could handle, but aliens creeped me out. If it got too bad, I'd leave my seat, sit in the ladies' lounge till the movie ended, reading Christian Science. What? Reading Christian Science Monitor and Watchtower. Walking home from the bus, we spoke in low voices. Soon all three of us were home and fast asleep in our beds, long before my dad came home from the bar. Thank you.
Our next poet is Mike Knapps.
This is called Like Beasts. The young help the old out of cars, their youth produced in the fury of manufactured revolutions. Then the young sit at tables, munching away in silence, their eyes bowed to transportable screens, the veil of generations hardened by technological savvy. Language reduced to characters, communication phonetically savage, like beasts. Thank you.
Is Boyne Kunz here?
This is a bit rough. I just wrote it, but actually, Paola referenced the Denora inversion, and it's in my poem. So, Pittsburgh. This is called Pittsburgh, the 4th of July. Pittsburgh, mornings, your rivers, liquid asps, molt their dawn fog. Boulevards cast nets of metal, lattice dolphins frozen in flight. Across these summer waters. The parkway runs along the shore, an excited dog, panting sedans and box trucks and delivery vans, clean wrapped in logos. Eventide, the Duquesne incline, clicks an envelope of treated wooden ties, serrated by bulb light. Red cars pack their chaw of travelers, then swing off Mount Washington from braided ropes of black metal, their jaws thrust out for a fight. Darkness and the combination of fireworks rise above a cocktail terrain. Bubbles of white boats form and skeeter cross the cracked glass bottom of the Monongahela and Allegheny Rivers, then shatter to fallen waves in the Ohio. Finally, you sleep. Down round your houses, drunk on the snakehead liquor of automated innovation, your hallucinations of the past, gabbling in a hillbilly tongue of mill hunks and melons, dies coughing like the sickly, the elderly, during the Denora inversion of 1948. Like them, faded, forgotten. Thank you.
And is Elias here tonight? Okay, Elias.
Hi. Okay. This one's called Bittersweet. You prick, go ahead, turn the key. You fool, lace up those blood-stained loafers. You walked away, you did the right thing. Tears, because the most fertile soil brought joy, because a breath is exactly desire's madness. It is to have all and nothing, but nothing to have all, and all to have nothing. Light peers through tree branches, inflecting plumes of smoke from a cigarette in the dead of night. It's kind of short.
Elias, you want to make sure you come back and read more poems. Okay. And our last reader tonight, I think, is going to be Stefan. Is Stefan here?
Yeah, I am, I think.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. I read a poem called Mother a couple of weeks ago, and I think I insulted every mother in the room. So this is called Father. And this is for Jan. He wore fourth hand-me-downs as a kid. Fashioned cardboard soles for one pair of shoes that he blackened with polish to hide the holes, to hide. But he walked. Walked learning a stilted English that felt like gristle on his tongue. But he walked. Toward the idea of having real shoes, of having a clean tongue, a clear sentence. And he walked, walked, and the sentence came, the tongue in place and smooth. He bought blue shoes, red, yellow, white, suede, fine leather, patent, two-tone, hundreds of shoes that replace the dirt floors, five brothers to a bed. The odor of urine, dumplings, halupkas, and old chicken. So he walked in the purple shoes, tan, green. In true black, he walked against all of it. The piety, the incessant vapid chatter of pretense, the poverty, the authority. This savagely intelligent clown making his way. Playing it like jazz, walking like a thin Buddha, embracing me, lifting me with my shoes, kissing me with his last step.